This episode is brought to you by Stay Roasted, the ultimate fresh roasted coffee subscription. Get your first bag of coffee for free. You only pay shipping when you visit stayroasted.com/filmsack. That's stayroasted.com/filmsack.
I can extend the length, but the girth gets less.
What? You just broke Scott.
Oh my gosh, that made me laugh. It hurt. It almost hurt a little bit. But I laughed then, just now.
Yeah, homicide. Apparent 601, Caucasian female. I'd say 25. Lying flat on her back on the boardroom table like a piece of sushi. Quite a sight. Better get down here.
Hello. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 313, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian. He's laying on the conference table like a piece of sushi Dunaway.
Oh, hi. This week's movie taught me more about women than my entire illustrious courting career. Apparently, women like to smoke naked, be used as plates, naked. Take Wesley Snipes piggyback rides naked and do weird flipper sex things with Sean Connery behind those Japanese paper door things.
Naked.
This thing's called naked.
I don't know what those are called. What are those called? Those doors, those paper doors, just paper doors?
Paper doors.
All right. They seem very inefficient.
We couldn't afford real doors.
Yeah.
Let's put some paper.
Yeah. Japan, man. It's a land of mystery. It's the house of the rising sun. Also with us, Randy, he likes to use the gizmo Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian?
Hi.
Now you listen to me. You don't understand these people from this mysterious place, so you need to learn. That shine you called a pile of dung is actually a beehive. They don't believe that they're the only ones who are hung up on green jello and funeral potatoes and square donuts and naming their girl children Jenny Lynn and Oak Lynn and McKate Lynn. And if you keep sloughing off and biffing this subject, they're not going to give you any fry sauce.
All right. I have this just in. This I just was told in my ear by the producers.
Best Dr. Evil ever.
The worst Sean Connery impression ever made. That was what that was. Well done. Also with us finally, Brian Socky Nipples Ibbot.
It was my nickname in high school.
Yeah.
This is the video room. Welcome. Check it out. From this room, we can see everything going on in the building, including right there in that boardroom where that murder took place. Oh, this? It's the gizmo. Check it out. Using this, I can pan this way and can zoom in over here, and we can get a clearer look at where that that mirror is over there. Yep. Just like the mirror in that recording that shows Eddie was the murderer. Ah, but wait, want to see me magically change the pixels to show you who the real murderer is? Don't worry. I can use the gizmo. TM. Poof. There's the real murderer. Now you can tell your partner, Sean Connery, who done it, so you guys can go get him. Well, where is Sean Connery anyway? What, he's messing around with who? Tia Carrere? Apparently he has his own gizmo.
Oh! I wonder where this was going. Don't get it wet. That's what they always say about gizmo. Don't get it wet.
Don't get your gizmo wet.
All right. The movie is freaking Rising Sun. All right. Not the freaking part, but Rising Sun.
You know, I never freaking saw this movie.
No, me neither, it's man. 1993.
I saw it in the theaters. I read the book, and I saw it in the theaters, and I remember back then, for some reason, I enjoyed it.
Oh, yep, wow.
Me too.
I never saw it, and I never read the book. This is a Michael Crichton joint once again. We've done now quite a few of these. He has to be the most regularly featured author in Film Sack that I can think of.
More than Stephen King?
That's an interesting point. I wonder if most...
And Crichton... Yeah. And Crichton will always be that. Well, you know, he's passed away since then, but he will always, his movies are always like that because he would pick a subject that would interest him and then he would dive into it. And it was usually something very new, cutting edge, or a new idea, you know, us learning about the Japanese or, you know,
Photoshop
cloning or Photoshop, exactly. Whatever. He would just dig in. And so all of his movies are kind of stuck in that infant stage of when we're discovering stuff. So it's always going to be film sack material.
It always feels like you get short shrift though. Like once in a while, something works out, like Jurassic Park. Totally awesome. Totally worked out.
Well,
for
I think
him.
All of them worked out. This movie made money. Okay, when I say worked out, I mean it was a successful book and movie. It worked out.
Did it make money? This movie did it.
It didn't hold up.
Well, did it make money though?
It made money.
This claim that
it was like at the top for like 10 weeks or something.
Did it make enough money?
It had a $35 million budget, and in the U.S. only, it made $63 million. So it almost doubled its budget just in USA.
All right. Well, if that's what we're counting as important cinema, then I guess it won. But in my mind, they're all garbage. They're just bad. Like Congo, bad. This, bad. Freaking
Spear, bad.
Yeah. What's the other one?
Spear, bad.
What's
Can we please dig into this subject? Because
Hold on. Before we get to the subject and before we get to Scott Fletcher, I have to ask Scott.
You say that assuming there's a Scott Fletcher. That's funny. Oh. Because today, as you heard the burp in the opening, that meant Scott screwed up again. It's totally my fault. This is not Scott Fletcher's fault. Oh, I just said Scott screwed up. I mean me. Scott Johnson screwed up. Scott Fletcher did not. There is no Scott Fletcher. Anyway, continue your thought.
Yeah, I had to ask you, how excited did you get, Scott, when credits start rolling? You see, written by Michael Crichton, mm-hmm. and it's a Western, mm-hmm. and there's a dog running out of a saloon with a hand in his mouth, and you're thinking, oh my God, this is like pre-Westworld. Oh, it's a karaoke video?
I was irritated, if you want the truth. I was irritated. And it was then the first face I see singing karaoke is Shang Tsung from the Mortal Kombat films.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you have to understand in 93 that Japanese fascination with karaoke was at a high. Mm. I mean, it was just, you know, it was a phenomenon from the time.
Was it, or was it us trying to figure out why it was and it had always been there for a long time? Because I don't think this was.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not sure that we actually know anything about Japanese culture as a result of this movie or in spite of this movie. This film is bad in that regard. Yeah. It's like a David Attenborough impersonator trying to tell you about Canada. Like, I just don't know. I don't know if I trust the David Attenborough impersonator from Peoria.
You got to remember, like I said, I think Crichton was very easily influenced by stuff. And so can you imagine Crichton? Very tall guy. He went to Japan, visited, started learning some of this culture. Sure. And he's just scraping off the top. He's scraping off the top mm-hmm. of Japanese popular culture from 93.
Okay.
And he's bringing it back. And all right, it's incorrect.
But his notepad
says a snapshot.
His notepad basically coming back from Japan. All right, I'm ready to write this book. Sushi, sake, and bow when you're bowed to. That's
he was taking all the weird crap that was going on in 93 in Japan that was not the norm, but was the weird crap.
What was the weird crap though? Because
here's my concubine deal.
Oh, well, sure. But here's my impression of what the movie was trying to do. And I haven't read the book, and I hear the book's pretty good, so I can't speak to it. And Brian, you read it, so your memory of it may be...
Barely remember it, though. It was, you know, 90, whenever.
Yeah, it's not counted as one of his great books, but it's up, you know, people say it's fine. What I would ask is this. In 93, big year for Crichton, by the way. That was also Jurassic Park year, so made money all across the board. What this felt like to me was the filmmakers and the screenwriters, which had a lot of disagreements with Crichton. He eventually left the project. That's an important thing to note here. He was pissed at the director for various reasons, but they were setting Japan up to look like, oh, okay, well, we've got a vacuum now where the Cold War used to be, and we don't have another bad guy, because right now Russia's on the outs because they've been, you know, the Soviet Union's been broken up, so we need something to vilify. I know. Let's go back to the Japanese. Yeah.
Right?
Well, sort of. Were they? I don't know.
Yeah. And Scott, you're basically outlining the beginning of the book. Like the book says all of that.
Okay.
That for you to read this book, you need to understand that this is going on, and what's going on is what you just said.
Okay. So that's the setup. The setup is Japan. The Empire of Japan is reasserting itself as a nefarious power and are trying to take over stuff through economic means or whatever. and the Yakuza's all up in it, and that. I mean, that's the conceit of the book, of the arc of the story. And I guess if you buy that, then it's fine. But it never worked for me in this, and maybe it's because it's been so long and I've only seen it today and not in 93. But, you know, we just didn't have another boogeyman yet. We didn't have Islamic terrorists, or we didn't have whatever the next movie-based focus would be.
And we also didn't know, obviously, in 1992 that the American dollar was going to outperform so hard. Like, it felt like all signs pointed to Japan just taking over.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It really did. Like, the entire American psyche had come along through the 60s and 70s, and then in the 80s, suddenly all of our TVs and all of our radios were made by Japanese companies, you know, and so on. And so Crichton was just capitalizing on something that people didn't know they were noticing. And that's the thing about Crichton books. He always does that to you. He's like, you know, that thing that you might have noticed, and he treats you like, aren't you so smart? See, aren't you so smart? And then he gives you a bunch of details, and you feel smart.
Right.
He's good at that.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know.
I know how to make baby dinosaurs.
It just, yes, do. It just all kind of landed flat on me, the idea that Japan is this, and I'm sure it's modern context, because, you know, that's just not the relationship we have with them right now. But there are some amazing actors in this. Like, the cast is insane.
Oh yeah,
across Keitel the board.
And Buscemi and
The cat, the presence of the cast is amazing.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say their performance.
Well, the cast's other accomplishments are amazing.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. That's what I mean. Although I'm actually gonna argue that Wesley Snipes is okay in this. He's kind of gives a fairly in some scenes a pretty nuanced performance.
Right.
But everybody else is just phoning it in, really.
And you gotta love the fact that you see, a tech company started by Crazy Joe Davola, and the guy meets on the subway with the TV guides.
Yep. Right, and he's hanging out constantly with the dude from Scrubs, who was the lawyer.
Yeah, the lawyer from Scrubs.
No, that is the guy. That is the TV guide guy. Is the guy from
Scrubs.
Oh,
he is the guy. That's right. Okay, so wait, that makes what three or four actors from Seinfeld are in this movie?
Because three at least, because it's the guy with the mole on his shoulder.
Let's see.
I've had that mole ever since I was first married. There's a picture of me with my family on the beach, George.
Yep. You're
and are
totally
you counting
right.
Amy Hill from the Seinfeld episode, The Understudy?
No, that's okay. Well, there's another one then. See, Seinfeld, you got him.
I feel like Tia Carrere was on Seinfeld too, wasn't
sure.
she?
Yeah,
was she?
I guarantee she probably was.
Yeah, I may as well say it. I don't know if she was or not, but you may as well just say she was.
This movie made me feel bad. By the way,
why?
Just
me
first
too,
of all,
yeah, go ahead.
I mean, okay, well, this is 93, and it you forget how close we were to racism taking kind of a shift from, you know, like Wesley Snipes is really coming into his own. He's making a lot of slavery jokes. You don't really hear those much anymore because we're so far away from. I wouldn't say we're far away from it. I just think it was we were much more sensitive to
We're coming back around, is what I'm saying.
Hey, we're coming back around, absolutely.
Yeah, we're coming back around to that sweet racism.
Racism is making a big comeback.
That's right.
On the menu, boys.
That's right. Back on the menu.
It felt really weird. But it felt very, I was like, wow, it was just such a, I don't know. It seemed out of place. I mean, if you saw that kind of stuff, it would seem over the top during if it came out today.
Yeah.
Some of the things Wesley Snipes was saying, but then it was more appropriate.
Yeah, no, I mean, like any a lot of movies we see that are older, they just feel out of place. But this one feels maybe more jarring because it's kind of just barely out of place. Like to see something in the early 80s, you're like, oh yeah, well, that's like a whole different universe. But then you see something from 93 and I still feel tied to that in some ways. And, you know, to me, I've always told you guys this and we've talked about it on the show many times, but there's a median of time for films for me that represents what came before and what came after. And it is Jurassic Park and it is right around 93. That was the year where I went, oh, movies are capable of new kinds of illusions that are going to change film forever. And that's what it felt like to me. So this was right at that median of time. And sometimes I'll see another movie from 93 and go, oh my gosh, this feels 50 years old.
Right.
And I'll see Jurassic Park and go, nope, that's like I saw it yesterday.
Right. And the big problem with this movie is not the movie's fault.
Right.
It's that Japan crashed and plateaued at a lower level of impact globally and just stayed there ever since, mm-hmm. like 5 seconds after this movie came out.
Right.
You know, right. So we're just not we're not at all able to access this very easily. It's this strange bygone day that we don't really think about anymore.
So there's a line here, or there's a piece of trivia that I want to explore. Writers Michael Crichton and Michael Bakes, who was the screenplay dude, or Backus, I don't know how you say his name, quit the project largely over disagreement with director Philip Kaufman that one of his lead characters should be changed to an African-American. So I guess the original book was not a black dude. It was some white guy or something.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know why that mattered to them, but
I read the book. I barely remembered. Apparently they also changed who the murderer was.
Oh, really?
Which time? From the book.
Yeah. Oh, I want to know who did it then. Who did it? I want to know. Was it Mako? I hope it was Mako.
They didn't even say in the movie that it was a de facto person that they've actually discovered.
Right. Yeah. They leave that up in the air. You never know. They just kill people and then it's over.
Exactly.
Photoshop.
The truth will get sunk into that concrete with the good hair, dude.
By the way, anytime there was an executive meeting in this movie, all I could think of was this is like a MASH reunion in here. Like all of these people, they've all been on MASH. And
Kelly Nakahara.
Yeah, they've all
Nurse
been on
Kelly.
Every one of them have been on MASH at some point.
How come? Where's James Hong? Yeah. If we're gonna have a Seinfeld reunion in a movie with featuring prominent Japanese actors,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Or ones that pretend to be Japanese, it's fine. Just put them in there.
Can we run down the one-hit wonder of directors, Philip Kaufman?
Well, we've had other of his films on the show, right?
He's a one-hit wonder of directors. He has done one great film and a bunch of crap like this.
Well, let's see.
He's a much better writer, in my opinion. He's written about it.
Here's where...
Just his director credits, right?
Yeah, just director credits. So Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of the things we've seen him do. So that was from 78.
Now, that was a 78, and that was a real interesting...
I like that movie. 10 years prior to this, he did The Right Stuff. That's a great movie.
That's the one-hit wonder, I'm guessing.
Yeah. The Unbearable Lightness of Being is a movie people think they like.
A lot of sex in that one.
People think they like.
Well, Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, Juliette Binoche, however you say her name, Lena Olin, all those people. That's a good movie, I guess, but it's like Oscar bait. But yeah, he's mostly known for writing good things. Oh, Rising Sun, Quills, Twisted, and Hemingway and Gellhorn.
Yes. Quills is that Marquis de Sade film, and it's horrible.
Is it? Oh.
Wait a minute. Okay, so Unbearable Lightness of Being, little porny.
Yes.
Henry June, little porny.
Little porny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rising Sun, little porny.
Yeah.
A lot porny.
Yeah.
A lot porny.
Watch it. Quills. Accidentally have one of your kids come in while you're watching that movie, and you realize what porn you're watching.
Yeah.
Ibbitt was establishing a trend that it comes up to Quills not only being porny, but being about porn and about a porn maker.
Mm.
If he would have had his way, what would the astronauts have been doing in The Right Stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait,
the director's cut.
I had never even heard of Quills until you guys just said it. So that's news to me. I knew that existed, but that was what, 2000? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what he's known for, or what he's most celebrated for, is his writing. He wrote all the Indiana Jones stuff.
Yep.
Story for Ark. Story for Last Crusade. Doesn't say whether. Yeah, it doesn't say the second one was him, but he did characters. He's credited for characters in some of them and writing the others.
It's just characters that he introduced in the first Raiders movie. So
he
didn't write Crystal Skull.
Right, that's a good point. So let's see. Is there anything else in there that's any good? Nope. It's just it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. So he's one hit wonder for the writing, one hit wonder for the directing.
Well, you know, The Right Stuff was a good screenplay. And,
that's what we're talking about. Yeah. It's a Tom Wolfe book.
So he's a two-hit writer, a one-hit director.
Right Stuff, he was handed on a silver platter a great film to make, you know, with great actors and a great screenplay.
Yeah.
And he just did it. Like, he painted inside the lines.
He did. He's credited for screenplay for that. But, like, for Raiders of the Lost Ark, let's see. I'm trying to find the writing credit for that. I'm trying to see what. He's like full on story dude. So that entire thing is his. I'm still saying one hit wonder for the stories. I don't think he count Right Stuff because that's just screenplay work. And that's not that that's not important. It is, but it's not his source material. So I'm giving him one there. We'll give him 1.5 for director because I think Invasion of the Body Snatchers had its moments. I think that movie was okay.
By the way, we've talked off and on about really long movies. I dare you to put on The Right Stuff and stay awake for the whole thing.
That's pretty boring.
It's,
I dare you to turn on Rising Sun and stay awake for the whole thing. Yeah.
But look at that cast, man. Sam Shepard, Scott Glenn, Ed Harris. Man, The Right Stuff had the most badass cast ever. They were all super young. Oh, so good.
It's the same with Rising Sun. I mean, we already mentioned it, but you got to be impressed with the producers of this film. Mm-hmm. Not Sean Connery, who just got an executive producer credit for I don't know why.
Yeah.
But they brought together a really interesting, differing group of people and called half of them Japanese and the other half American.
Yeah.
And it somehow works. Like you kind of go along with, I mean, Harvey Keitel doesn't belong in this movie and Ray Wise doesn't belong in this movie, but they somehow all hold together as Americans.
Sure. He's a good sleazy senator though. He's a good sleazy everything, but he played a pretty good sleazy. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but maybe this speaks to Philip Kaufman's style of just can't stop thinking about boobs or something the whole time.
Yeah.
Because when Ray Wise shot himself and the camera didn't show it, the camera moved away and it was just a photo of the girl who died.
Super trope, by the way, right there.
Yeah, big time. But there's the girl's photo laying there. She's on the conference table dead. And when he shoots himself, two drops of blood fly onto the photo and they land perfectly on her breast, right, one and two.
Right,
yes.
Right on her boobs, yeah.
I just thought that is the stupidest thing I've seen in this movie. Because
That had to be. Because there's just a dude sitting there with like a little a bloody pencil or something who's just going flick.
Yeah, but how many takes and did they just do that one and go, look what it did. We're totally keeping that one.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I don't think that was meant to be intentional. Like, oh, that's perfect. It landed on her boobs. That's exactly what we're trying to say with this scene.
The only thing in that picture was her boobs. I mean, it would be hard to miss them.
That's what they want you to think.
Can we put a trope alert on the trope here?
Of course. Hold on. Here it is.
In this movie, sex is just happening everywhere. It's just right out of sight. The next room over, you know, in the car on the way, sex is just happening everywhere.
Yeah, all the time.
There was a lot of topless women and a lot of topless Asian dudes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lots of that. And also bum floss Asian dudes, guys with wearing the sumo looking bum floss.
Right.
Also a pair of panties that are big enough to hold a whole stack of business cards.
I was like, that's like the unsexiest sexy panties I've ever seen in my life.
That whole scene, I just kept thinking, it's like looking at my grandma in the 20s or something.
Yeah.
Ugh, I didn't like that at all.
Card over here. I've got a file of facts over on this side. And
wasn't the French cut underwear popular during that time? And I think that was the problem because they were hiding the side leg, which is what you like about the French cup. They don't tell you about that is it's got the really high middle.
Mm-hmm.
It was uncomfortable. Like you said, grandma.
It was in her writer.
Yeah.
Right.
That's grandma underwear, dude. It's freaking gross. But also
somebody's being terribly offended right now because that's their favorite pair of underwear.
I'll tell you what though. Here's the frustrating thing. I actually think one of the other better actors in the film was the guy who played Eddie and Shang Tsung. What's his name? I can't find his name. Damn it.
Stanshaw? Oh.
No, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, or how do you
Kerry
say it?
Kerry Tagawa.
That guy. All right. So he's
love him.
He's Shang Tsung, and he's in a million other things, and he's great. He's great, and he's good in this. If you haven't seen Man in the High Castle on Amazon, you're all insane. He's amazing in that. He is the best part of it.
That was him. Oh, my gosh. Yeah,
he's
no kidding.
Director of whatever it was, and he's so freaking good. It's such a pivot moment at the end for him.
Coming back in like 2 weeks, man.
Dude, I cannot wait. Anyway, he's amazing in all things. Now, here's the deal. I'm not sure I can go on with my life after seeing the socky nipple scene with him.
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna have to watch Man in the High Castle season 2 and go, dude, I seen what you did. I seen it.
I'm saying everything in this film, he hams it up. He is just determined to get as much screen time as he can. So he acts kind of slow. It's freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
I love this guy in this movie. I hated the character.
Yeah.
Who does he do? He's a voice actor in Legion.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. He's listed as in his IMDb credits. He's voice actor. World of Warcraft Legion.
That pleases me greatly. Let's see.
I know. I want to know who he does.
It'll tell you right here. It says, no, where's the date? I don't see it in his credits.
In his IMDb credits?
Yeah. Where are you looking
at? No, it's in his IMDb credits, but his actual character.
Oh, there it is. You're right.
Yeah, his character is listed.
Oh, I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Is he like a panda? That'd be great if he was a panda. I want him to be a panda.
I have my ways.
Give I was going to say, second. If anybody can find it, Randy. Yeah.
Get out your machete and knock that grass down and find it.
Oh, you know what else he did that we've actually talked about on FilmSec? He narrated the Overwatch video Dragons.
Oh, yeah, right.
The Overwatch short film.
The Genji one?
Yeah.
Hey, I knew that.
Oh, love that one.
Really amazing work there, too. Gosh dang it, the guy's great. He's so cool, but now I can just—I've got a little thing of sake and a little booby there.
That's all right,
and it's fine. Listen, you do what you do for your role. I get it. It's not your job, you know. It's not his job to question the thing. And if you're up for it, you're up for it. But it's all I can picture now. So I'm gonna watch like Mortal Kombat, and I'm gonna go, "Oh, Shang Tsung, where's the nipple and some sake? It's all you need right now, buddy."
Did it freak you out when Tarantino drank? Oh yeah, it did.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it did.
Dirty old hooker nipple.
No, I was thinking the from the foot. Still done.
Yeah, no, the shoe. You're right, and that's my whole point.
Selma Hayek's shoe.
Now, by the way, we may as well get to it now. What grossed Scott out? You guys want to do that now?
Because gosh,
I have one.
What grossed us all out? I mean,
See if you can guess. It was the same scene. Two things happened in it. And I
I mean, there's no question. It has to be the sushi eating off the body and the nipple sake.
Nope. Definitely not that.
If that doesn't gross you out, then I don't know what.
All right, here it is. For you, man. It is. Yeah. Unless you guys have another guess. Any other guesses? Hold on,
I'll tell you what. The moment I thought, and this is gonna, I don't know that I really want to explain this, but I thought to myself, Scott probably doesn't like this. So right before the woman dies on the boardroom table, he carries her in and he sits her on the table and then he goes down on her.
Yeah.
And then after he's gone down on her for a while, he removes her underwear. And I thought, oh, he was licking underwear.
Oh, gross. Now that you mention it, that should be on the list, but it's still not it.
Friends, this is an adult-oriented podcast.
Oh, well, it is
just
now.
Because we're going to get emails. I'm not going to go into any detail, but just to avoid the emails.
All right,
there are ways around that.
I sure. know. It okay. Was just all right. What I thought. I know.
Okay. Right. Okay. Emailers, save your characters for another day.
Don't send us any photos. We know.
Yeah, we get it. We got it.
How does this work? I'll show you how it works.
All right. Here's
tell us, Scott, please.
All right. Save us. Here it is. They're in the room trying to get evidence. I do not hold with people tasting people's half snorted cocaine.
That is
a great thing. Like, it's a mirror with some white lines on it.
Yeah.
That could be creamer.
Yeah. Hey, him tasting somebody's half snorted cocaine, which means they've been blowing their nose all over it. That's gross. Yeah, and then
how cocaine works, Scott.
No. Like I'm telling you, when you're a cracked out freaking cocaine head and you are horking that stuff off a thing, I don't want it to be anywhere near where those people's noses are.
He's talking like backwash for cocaine.
Yes, thank you.
I don't think it works like that.
I don't know how that works either.
I think it does.
You're cutting the cocaine on the mirror. I don't think it's like, oh, I can't finish this one. I'm going to put some of it back.
Additionally, tell me that you shared this thought I had with the dog carrying the dismembered hand, where you think, oh, wow, to be the next person that dog licks.
Nope, that didn't bother me at all. Here's what bothered me. It was the same scene as the Coke thing. It's when they started sniffing pillows for no reason.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you smelling pillows? What are you doing in that thing? Gosh,
dang it.
It was
the dumbest CSI ever, because they're infecting the scene, or whatever they call tainting the evidence or whatever.
Yeah,
they're picking stuff up. Oh, smell the pillow. Oh, she used this pillow.
Yeah, this pillow smells like a person and all their disgusting freaking night spit. Oh, and by the way, hey, there's a bag over here. I wonder if, because we already know she likes this over her head, I wonder if we should smell that. Oh, yeah, let me smell that bag where someone's had their head in there. Freaking disgusting, dude.
Now let's compare the pillow to the bag. Yes, yeah. She slept here, and she put that bag over her head.
Oh, that fouled me up. Everything in that scene just made me go, guys, stop.
They were walking around with all five senses trying to detect everything. They were feeling stuff, sniffing it, rubbing it on their bodies.
It was like some sex happened.
No, there was some bad police work there. And at the top of the show, or before anyone heard this recorded, we were talking just about the movie ahead of time, and then we started. And somebody brought up this being in L.A. I never once felt like I was in L.A. I always felt like I was somewhere else.
Because you've been to Los Angeles, and you know it's not black and wet all the time.
It doesn't rain there. But also, not just that, just something about it. Like, nobody ever felt... I felt like I was in some bizarro land of just mostly Japanese people wandering around. And in fact, for the first probably 15 minutes of the movie, I thought they were in some Asian city.
Yeah, I thought they were in Japan at first. Yeah. That's exactly. Wait a minute. No, they're not. What's going on here? Right. And I thought they were New York. And then I'm like, no, they're not New York. Where are they at?
And what do? You just go find Sean Connery doing a thing, and he's just your expert for Japanese stuff. And what's his none of that stuff feels explained. It all feels unintentionally ethereal and weird. I didn't.
You know, we had the buddy cop movies in the 90s that were really big. We also had the buddy, you know, we had the funny buddy cop movies, but then we also had the not so funny, like, all right, crime cop, here's the expert teamed up with the guy who's writing checks that his badge can't cash or something like that. And kind of like Red Heat. This is kind of like the Red Heat, but just substitute Asian for Russian.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. I think that's exactly what this, like, it's trying to be that thing, and I don't mind that thing. I'm okay with it. In fact, there's a new movie coming out with Anthony Hopkins that was supposed to originally be a sequel to Seven, where he's like a clairvoyant.
They go find the head in the snow. Is that what they do?
No, I don't know how it was gonna work. but it's him and it's the guy that plays Negan. Can't think of his name. Also, Dean Morgan. Yeah,
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
The trailer looked really good. Actually, it looks like tracking down a serial killer. Oh, and the serial killer is guy we were just talking about earlier, in Bruges guy.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell is the psycho. Anyway, what was my point? Oh, I like that. Like, oh, here's a cop who's just street smart and worked real hard, but he's pretty practical and pragmatic. And then he's teamed up with somebody who's a little loopy, right? I like that. That's a fine combination. But this didn't do a very good job.
I'm happy to see that come back as a genre, because I think when it's done well, you know, it's entertaining as hell.
Yeah, and you know, the odd couple idea of, wow, you'd never see these two people working together, but man, it sure works out. Actually, turns out having a guy like Connery working with Snipes, there's your perfect combination: old white guy from Scotland and a black guy from the hood. And here we go.
I think it crushed under its own weight too in the 90s, because you had like all the not Carpenter, who's the guy who wrote like Kiss the Girls and all the Alex Cross stuff. James Patterson. Mm. Yeah. You had all his stuff. You had Bone Collector. You had the Gina Davis one that I can't remember, with Samuel Jackson.
Do you feel like Seven started a lot of that? I feel like Seven was like the...
I think Seven was at the high point of that. I think it started before.
It's maybe the best point of it.
Before Seven.
I think there's this window of opportunity where Walden Books made a bunch of things happen. Like, seriously. Like, there's this window of opportunity for a few years where bookstores were suddenly very available to middle America. Mm-hmm. And tons of money flowed into publishers who were just like, give us your cereals. Every cereal you can give us, we want to eat it for breakfast. I see I changed the word there. But
I see what you did.
Thank you. But then the internet comes along and kind of trashes it all. And now everybody can, you know, write serial novels.
I have not thought about Walden Books in forever, which is one of the reasons I was laughing there, but you were so totally right, because I bought every James Patterson book at the Walden Books. I bought every freaking Crichton book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the B. Dalton.
Yeah, B. Dalton. I was going to say that I don't think I haven't seen Walden's in decades, or at least 10 years.
Oh, no. That they went out with the Orange Julius's in the mall.
Mm. Right. We're feeling a little nostalgia over here. Myself was going to Barnes & Noble's this week, as well as which is like it's like an hour drive for us.
They're the last bastion, man. They're about it. Right? Yeah, I went to a really nice one in when I was in Orange County a couple weeks ago. I went to one near Anaheim that was freaking awesome. It makes me I really don't want the final giant bookstore to go away. I really don't.
Right.
Like as much as I'm pro digital and I'd much rather read things on my Kindle and I don't hardly buy anything when I do go to Barnes and Noble. I get like a chai tea when I'm there or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Orange County is like where it's going to be the last holdout.
Yeah.
Cause there's all this money and people want to spend it immediately. They don't want to wait for their book to be delivered 6 hours from now by Amazon. I
totally
fast.
See that. Yeah. And it was like four stories. Oh, that place is cool. It was really good. Anyway, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
I think there will always be bookstores like that. I mean, it's certainly not to the degree. Well, when I say always, I mean, within our lifetime.
Yeah, maybe. I think that there's always room for small boutique focused stuff. There's millions of those in cities and stuff. And like Salt Lake City alone, there's like I can name 10 that are these amazing lifelong family owned places that are doing well. And they have, you know, these coffee shops now attached to them. And they're just a place where the community goes and supports. But big chain stuff probably on its final run.
Whatever. Right. I mean, come on, Randy. I mean, they still got coconuts somewhere, right? Where I can go get a laser disc.
No, they don't actually. And
wait, Brian, you said George Julius went? No, Orange Julius is still around.
Well, now they're merged with Dairy Queen. It's like a DQ Orange Julius combo now, isn't it?
Yeah, where you're at? And that's wrong, isn't it? Like that shouldn't happen. That's like
that's not wrong. That's survival.
That's like when Pizza Hut and KFC had similar stores right next to each other. Like F that.
We have the Taco Bell /
Radio
KFC
Shack Sprint.
But to me, it's worse because. It would be more like Radio Shack, Apple. Like, it makes no sense to have those two things together. Like, Pizza Hut and freaking KFC, they just don't belong together at all. Like, nowhere near one another. Or A&W.
Au contraire, have you not heard about the new KFC? It's a slab of chicken that's cooked with pepperoni and mozzarella and tomato sauce on it.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. I feel like we talked about that on TMS.
We did. You're right.
It was like the double down interested. Of pizzas.
They're finally taking a hand across the aisle and deciding how to join.
I can't wait till they throw the Taco Bell in there and you get a folded fried chicken with the...
Brian, while you have my complete and undivided attention, tell me more. How much does this cost?
Yeah, what's it going to cost for the chicken chalupa?
Can I order it online and have it delivered?
Can you imagine a taco that is just pressed meat as your shell? Like, that's something.
I think not only can I imagine it, I say we see that in our lifetimes. We may not see the demise of the bookstore. We will see see in the next 5 years Vincent Minucci is out there right now writing down my prediction because apparently there was one in episode 170 that I predicted that we can't find that that he said came true.
True.
And something I want to get back to is I feel like we're kind of trashing the book inadvertently here, and it's a good book. Mm. It's a very entertaining book.
I'm sure it's great. Yeah.
It's a fine read.
Mm. Right. The things that we didn't like. Well, okay. There was several times this movie I felt like I was watching. Which Matrix was it where they did the explaining? Because that Matrix was the worst, and I feel like this movie was doing all the explaining,
too
and I just
explaining.
Didn't care.
Hey, both the last two Matrix movies did a lot of explaining, and they shouldn't have.
The Matrix movie with the letters RE in the title.
Yeah,
right.
Like
right.
Reloaded and revolved or whatever.
Rehashed.
The Matrix rehashed. Those sucked, and you're not wrong for some of the reasoning there. Like some of the times, not showing your hand is the way to keep. The thing going. I mean, imagine, like, I am in love with Westworld right now. Imagine if that show just was constantly trying to explain everything to me. It would suck.
Forgive me if I said this on the very last episode of FilmSack, but Westworld would be so much better if there was a book to read first.
Well, it's still a Crichton joint. Since we're talking about Michael Crichton, he invented that movie. Well, the first movie was written and directed by him, but
of
his books.
Can you imagine if there was a book to read that the show was based on? Like, actually based on, you know, not just taken from,
well,
inspired by.
Sure. They, I mean, in some ways I'm glad it isn't because now I don't have some other better thing. Like there's right. Like I don't want to have a book where I have to compare it or wonder
like
why they left this
Game
guy
of Thrones
out.
Business. You know, the people would be constantly comparing the TV show to the movie.
Right.
I mean,
that's what I want.
Why are we in this world? And I agree with Randy because I have the same feeling, but why do we need that? Why can't movies just be a movie anymore?
I think we
definitely feel like it needs to be backed up by
there are plenty of those like Valerian coming out, which looks rad. That Luc Besson Fifth Element looking thing looks incredible.
But doesn't it feel so don't those movies feel so transient though? They don't feel like they're going to hang around. It's like they just kind of float away without the anchor of a book.
But did you say that about Fifth Element? That's still considered by many people to be a science fiction classic, like a modern day.
Comparing Fifth Element to Westworld is just not even.
Well, no. I'm not trying to do that. But I am saying, like, if we're talking about films, and remember, movies are 2 hours and TV shows can go 12 episodes and many seasons to tell their arc. So I don't even think they're comparable. But a movie like Fifth Element came out of nowhere from a French director at the time nobody had really heard of and left a mark, man. Like, that thing still you think about what you saw and did in that movie. And you're just
left
like,
a mark like a dog like a, dragging his butt across a white carpet.
Well, it depends on if you liked it or not, I suppose. But
yeah, it was good.
It was a great movie. And Valerian, his only other science fiction film, which, you know, if you haven't seen the trailer, you should, looks really incredible. And it may or may not leave the same mark. It may be derivative. I don't know. But I think there's plenty of original work. The question is, does it become like a staple? Does it become Star Wars and Last Generations? Or does it become, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a bad example. I
feel like you changed the subject, though, because I was complaining about Westworld not explaining itself to me. Mm. And the reason it's not explaining itself to me is because it doesn't have to. It can go 100 hours and eventually get around to explaining itself to me. So it can open up all sorts of characters and plots and so on that it can just dangle out in front of me indefinitely, you know, and it will maybe eventually get around to. I'm comparing it to Lost is really what I'm doing.
Sure.
And Lost would have been a fantastic book series written by the right author.
Oh yeah, no question about it. And maybe the reverse will happen. Maybe you'll get a bunch of, I mean, it is possible to take a one kind of work and then make a derivative sort of work. It doesn't always have to go book, movie, or book, TV. It can go TV, book, movie, book. Yeah. I don't know that they do that here. Maybe some side story or something with Westworld, more to your point. Right. But you know, sometimes you see comic book adaptations that are better than the original, or you see reimaginings like BSG that just completely floor people and make you realize, oh my gosh, that actually had real, you know, there was meat to those bones. And not just some cheesy 70s Star Wars ripoff. Like, I think all of that's possible. The question is, does Rising Sun or does Michael Crichton film adaptations do anything to add to his movies? Because everybody last night I asked on Twitter, I put out a thing. I said, favorite Michael Crichton books, go. And everyone came back with Congo and Timeline were the number. Mm-hmm. Those were the two top vote getters. And they're the two worst movies.
Yeah.
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 So what the hell happened?
My favorite Michael Crichton book was such a good book and clearly going to be such a bad movie that they didn't even make a movie out of it. And I'm talking about Airframe.
That's like the one I was going to say, the airplane crash one. Yeah, right. That was so good. Mm.
So
They did a TV thing, didn't they? They tried to do a TV, made-for-TV movie, if want to save Airframe.
Yeah. So the question is, is the source material just not well represented in on the film? Is it because could you go
back?
It's
like Stephen King movies, dude. Think about those.
Could you make a better Congo? Could you redo it and do it right? Or is it
just the ideas? Think about all the Stephen King crap we've seen based on great books. And now you're starting to actually see good movies based on Stephen King properties. It started with Shawshank and some of his short stories, but it moved on from there. And now we're actually seeing, and hopefully Dark Tower lives up to its hype and everything else, but you're seeing like really good adaptations. The It remake sounds like it's going to be pretty incredible. It's like we just finally got to a place where we can properly do the Stephen King books justice, where we had decades of garbage of Stephen King adaptations. Why not Michael Crichton? Why does it have to be Jurassic Park? Why can't there be somebody? Can someone come in and go, we're going to do Timeline right this time? I think they could.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the movie was...
Forgot about Disclosure too. That was another one I really liked the book, and God, the movie was just horrendous.
So well, bad.
We keep naming books that have all of this cerebral stuff, all of this person explaining how things really work to another person, which just doesn't make good film. You don't want to sit for an hour while Senpai explains to Hawkeye. I don't remember what the other word was.
Apple pie. You know,
yeah, I just like. So anyway.
All right, I want to read Airframe while you were talking about it. I pulled it up and I'm.
You're gonna read it right now? I mean,
no.
Right
in the middle of
it. Come on, man.
I just feel like Crichton is due some love in films that isn't. You know, maybe no. Now that he's gone, I don't know. It's kind of sucks that you have to be gone for your stuff to get its best attention. I suppose he was around for.
I want to switch back to Stan Shaw for just a second and just say how much in a cast of amazing actors that Stan Shaw could stand up and be very noticeable.
He's the security. Shaw.
He was the security guy in the camera room. Also, he was Big George in Fry Green Tomatoes.
He was able to do
even though his performance was kind of it was unsettling and uncomfortable. I definitely remember it.
You didn't even name like the roles where I think of him the most. He was a stuttering boxer in Harlem Nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to say is that right?
Yeah,
no, was right. It Harlem? No, I thought it was.
He played Jack Jenkins. The famous boxer from Harlem in Harlem Nights. And
he's played some other boxers. He's played this a couple of times, that role.
Mm-hmm.
He's a boxer.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great. He's super interesting. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking he was the murderer and that they.
I did too. I was hoping he was the murderer because I'm like.
He started sweating the minute they walked in there.
Yeah, he was freaked out. I guess it was just because he didn't want to lose his job, but I kept thinking, no. They made him or something. Like they made him go in there and do it. But then I thought, no, wait. That wasn't him because you would have noticed and the hair was different. And the whole time I knew, by the way, speaking of like a bunch of false flags and stuff, 100% convinced it was the dude that
hair dude.
Yeah. The hair
Buffon,
dude.
Buffon dude. Yeah.
That hair dude was so stupid.
He just plays the total dick. It's like the character that Bill, what's his face plays in True Lies slimy car salesman that tries hooking up with Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies.
He's a true a big love guy. Hudson.
Bill Pullman.
Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Bob Paxton.
Bob Paxton.
Any Chet from Weird Science? Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Oh, yeah. Chet and Weird Science. Right.
All right. But Scott just opened a bottle. We got to drink it. Scott, what's the most 90s thing that you were ever caught looking or doing? Did your hair ever? Do you ever do that thing with your hair? Do you ever have the hair and the long sideburns?
Well, the 20s. Wardrobe? So my 20s. I mean,
you say 90s or 70s? 90s. Right? Sideburns and.
Yeah, I don't think 90s.
Did you ever try the bell bottom, Scott?
Did you give disco a try?
By the gallon. Did you guys have the LA Looks by the gallon? You know what I'm talking about? The LA Looks gel.
Yeah, we had it was blue, blue or green.
I never had hair I could gel.
And Brian Ibbett, you go watch Friends and watch how the actor's sideburns jump around from one year to the next.
I will tell you that for me, I mean my 20s were the 90s. So I was starting to adult up some. So I was less concerned about goofball crap. If you want to look at my 80s period.
You had the mullet, though, didn't you?
Only in the 80s. 90s, I didn't have a mullet.
Oh, that's true. I guess it was late 80s was mullet time.
Yeah. My mullet at its most luxurious was 1987 and 88, probably. I'd say 90 through 2000, I was, short hair, just normal looking, kind of average t-shirt jeans kind of guy. But there was a time in the 90s where I thought it looked really cool to have the brightest white sneakers you could wear. And it didn't matter what the other ensemble was. I would have that and a shit goatee. And that's not to say goatees are shit. Mine was shit.
No, but goatee is very 90s. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anybody listening who it's 2016 and you're wearing a goatee.
It's actually a Van Dyke.
We acted like we freaking invented the goatee in 1995.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't. We thought we did, but we didn't. Other than that, I was not. I don't know. I think I evened out quite a bit. But if you looked at me in the 80s, you go, holy shit, why is he wearing plaid shorts with like a bright purple, green, pink combination shirt and a giant mullet and glasses
that
are way too
thick.
Hey,
that's all about to come back, man.
The polo shirt and the mullet.
Yeah,
I've seen exactly one pair of acid wash jeans, and that's it.
Now, I'm having a funny experience. I'm glad you guys brought this up. My son, who's 16, is in high school, of course, and I could have said junior high. That would have made it sound like Nick got held back. But anyway, he's in high school, and all of his friends are now wearing pegged pants again. like we did in the 80s.
Seriously?
It's all back. Yeah, big time. He brought home some video of his friends doing flips in the hallway yesterday.
And hold on, I'm doing the math. That was 1986.
Yep. And every kid in this video had pegged way too short pants. Not only are they pegged, they're too short. Also ankle socks and then exposed ankle is the thing. So they're combining some stuff.
Are they also getting the 1986 boat shoes?
Did the warehouse just did a forklift just drop a pallet? What was that sound? That was amazing.
Another. That was me.
Oh, you're right.
Me. Apparently my office is infested with spiders.
Oh.
Another spider attack.
Did you throw a mouse at it or something?
No, I had it. It was on a bag and I was like, "Oh crap." So I threw it away from me and I knocked over some stuff.
That is hilarious.
My spider infestation continues.
Yeah.
I did not know what pegged pants were. I'd never heard that.
We just called it roll up.
Tight roll is what we called it. A little tight roll.
Yeah, we called them peg pants, and I did it in the 80s. And don't look at the lady photos. It's the man photos you want. Because the lady, I don't think, I think women have always stuck with the pegged look.
Well, sure.
But the dude, here's one. Let's see.
Yeah, is it the two dudes, one with the... God.
It makes me want to fart. I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. And Nick hates it. Oh, that's the point. My whole point of telling you guys that is Nick hates it. And he says, "Dad, I can't freaking stand it, and I don't want to wear pants like this." He says, "Even Mom tried to buy me a pair of these, and I don't want to do it." I said, "Stand strong, son. I'm with you. I'm in your corner. You don't have to fall to society's whims," I told him. Anyway, could the movie have had more equipment or items make the breathing lady sound? Like, I get it.
Windshield wipers.
Yeah.
And
oh, that was great. Yeah, the windshield wipers were so noisy. Oh, that's what it was.
Right. It was like that part of that song that was big in the late 80s and early 90s. What was that song that...
Love to Love You Baby by...
It was
that's what I think of when it's... That's 70s, but Donna Summer's
Love to Love You Baby. It's like an instrumental thing, and it was... I can't think of what it's called.
Oh, yeah. With the woman...
in the middle, she was going... Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What's that called?
That was 70s. That was... oh, my God. It was a disco song.
Oh, it was? I'm thinking of something else then.
Then you might be thinking of something else.
Fever last week?
No, shit. Mm-hmm. It's like... Someone at home's hearing this and knowing exactly what I mean. You'd hear it and you'd go to the mall and it'd be in the, like, all the record stores.
Oh, I know exactly. You're talking about... Yes. It was...
Yep, that's the
that
one.
Was, yes, it was like a Benedictine monks chanting
yes,
in it.
Yes.
Who the heck was that? It was this one word like began with an E.
De moi.
Yes. Began with an E. I'm looking it up because it's gonna drive me nuts now.
This is the weirdest conversation we've ever had on the show. But
Echo,
like,
Belly, Lips, going through my E's, Eddie Murray, Eddie Rabbit, Eddie Grant, Erasure, Editors, Edna Swap,
Enigma.
At the time,
Enigma. That's it.
At the time, we had Enigma and we had Sade, and they just covered all of that.
They
crap.
Totally did, dude. I was big Sade fan. I don't know what my problem was.
Yes, Enigma.
I don't know. Right, I'm not now, but
sadness,
I did.
Sadness, part one.
Oh, by the way, I have you guys to thank. My whole week last week was disco playlists, for real.
I noticed that with the beginning or the pre-instance setup.
Yeah, I'm so into it. Like, I've been listening to the Bee Gees like crazy. I've been listening to like all this old Donna Summer stuff. And like, I don't know what the deal is. Like, and there are songs like Michael Jackson's Against the Wall album, or what's it called? Something like that.
Off the Wall
is almost entirely a disco album, and I never really thought of it as that. Like, it totally is if you listen to it. And
I was
listening to that. I just couldn't get enough of it. So thanks, Saturday Night Fever. You're not,
by the way,
a piece of shit.
The 70s song that I was thinking of, with the funk with the woman heavy breathing in the middle of it, is the Chaka Cha's Jungle Fever.
Oh, well, that's a thing too then.
Yeah, so people need to look that one up and they'll hear that. It's like, but it's more like the, here's a little instrumental part with some funk, and then here's a woman who sounds like she's having an orgasm. Now let's get back to some funk, and then we'll get back to the sound of the woman having an orgasm.
Okay, I laughed out loud when they played the Love Shack song in the Japanese hooker place. That was great.
In the actual Love Shack. I had a note of that too. Like, they're playing Love Shack in the Love Shack.
What's the deal? And then also all the Star Wars wipes were driving me crazy. Oh, yeah.
You know, the car drives by and the light follows the back end of the car.
Hate it.
Speaking of the driving, by the way, here's a trope that we've probably talked about on the show before, but drives me. And okay, it drives me nuts when they do this with computers, where you're seeing somebody doing all their stuff on a computer, and then they cut to the person's face, and they're putting a projected screen of a computer screen on their face.
Yeah, I hate that.
When they did this in the movie with Wesley Snipes driving, and they have a projected image of the police car lights.
Yep.
Like
it's
really bad.
And then
bad.
The explosion. You see the explosion on his arm.
Yeah. That kind of stuff doesn't work very well.
It's not how that works, people.
Yeah, I did. I mean, look, all this stuff happening around him didn't change the fact that I miss Sean Connery in lots of ways. I really wish he was.
I didn't miss that haircut. Films.
I mean, what is he now? He's in his 80s, right? Like late 80s, something like that.
Yeah.
So he's probably well beyond. You know, could do anything. So I don't. I don't
there's
know.
There's no Rising Sun too.
No.
86.
But man, he's such a just presence, and just so, even in a bad movie, he's just got this face and this thing and this, he's just so great.
Honestly, this movie drags him down, and I think he kind of sucks.
No.
Oh, stop it now.
I'm not going to say he sucks. I'll say but Randy, I get your point. Like this is doing him no favors.
He's not given great material to work with, but I think he does the best he can do with it.
Yeah, maybe. There's some good lines, which I'll play here in a minute, which
They tried to be profound too many times, and I'm like, it just doesn't sound profound at all. It just sounds confusing. Mm. Everything you're saying, senpai.
But this was the this was the height of his comeback, though, right? Like, this was him doing tons of movies. Medicine Man was right around the corner, and he'd just gotten an Oscar for Untouchables.
He let enough time pass from being James Bond and doing that horrible James Bond remake.
Yeah.
Never
His
say
real
never.
Comeback though was
never say never
right?
again. Yeah,
Was that movie bad? I never did see it. Was it bad? It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, it was horrible. A remake of Thunderball that Cubby Broccoli didn't own the rights to. So it was the only movie in the James Bond catalog that could be remade outside of United Artists, and so they brought Sean Connery and they redid the movie with Kim Basinger and
then Sean Connery. Phones it in. He does not.
He
do
totally
a good
does.
Job.
Yeah.
Well, he's probably.
I might see an actor literally phone it in one time.
Yeah.
Just be on the phone the whole time.
Yeah. Colin Farrell, who we keep. He's like a whole movie where
totally
he phones
phoned
it in.
Yeah. Depends on. Depends on the movie. I like him.
Right.
All right.
Hey,
yes.
Go ahead. But
no,
I was going to
do clips. But if you got something else, keep going.
Okay. I just want to ask this. I want to ask because it's not. Is it really a trope? I don't know. Is there a name for the character type? That is the badass that never gets to be a badass because Eddie and his friend, he was all chomping down on that matchstick. And of course, Sean Connery comes up and flicks him in
neck
the neck and neck punches him. By the way, that is hilarious later on when they're putting everybody to sleep.
Yeah.
They're walking around just like giving them the Vulcan neck pinch everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the car.
So is there, so is there a character type for never gets to be a badass?
But we think bodyguard it could be that is, the bodyguard that is humiliated.
Right.
Looks big and scary, but just gets completely.
Right. Never gets an opportunity to perform.
Yeah. I don't know if it's got a name, but I do love that. Like, this guy drove me crazy. His voice was irritating. The guy he hung out with in the hot tub was so hairy, it made me want to vomit.
Eddie. Eddie was
that
awesome.
Should have been the thing I should have remembered that as the grossest thing for Scott was hairy dude in the hot tub.
I can't think of a way
that a hot tub is a place Scott Johnson wants to be if it's not his own personal solo hot tub.
Yeah. I like, listen.
Photos of you guys.
Yeah, it's not entirely true.
Scott prepared it. He disinfected it.
He drained it when you guys were done.
Right. Yep. Randy's not a problem though. Like people may see Randy and go, "Oh, he might be a big hairy. He's a hairy guy, but he's not that hairy." Like
all the hair on my body is on my chin and the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm a pretty hair free guy. It's when there's
down below, I'm smooth as a dolphin.
when there's hair that's like so flowy off your arms and back and shoulders and stuff. That stuff's going to come off and clog up my hole. So I don't want anything to do
my hole.
With hot tub hairy guy. It was freaking gross.
But this movie, by the way, give me a trope alert.
Oh, you want one of them, do you? Hold on. Gosh, dang it. There you go.
This movie could have been called Rising Red Herring because I mean, so they set up Eddie Sakamura right? So he's got this crazy relationship with Cheryl, but no, he didn't kill her. Okay. It was Senator Morton, right? Because we find out he had had sex with her and that he also was into erotic asphyxiation. No, he didn't kill her. The big bad guy in the movie is Ishihara. No, he didn't kill her. Yeah. Like, come on. Yeah. How many times do I have to be led by the nose to a conclusion the movie isn't going to make?
Many herrings. And the only herring ever finally found ended up drying in quick cement. Although I still say if you're cops and you saw where the bad guy went, you could go down there and say, all right, right. Pull the body out.
You got to at least try. You can't just walk away and go, eh.
That gang was meant to distract us. Yes. Slow us down.
That show
schmint. There were a lot of Coen Brothers moments like that in this movie. Like when they first go into the investigation and they're like, you need a warrant. Well, we can get a warrant in 15 minutes. Well, I think you need a special thing. Well, but that's not how the law works. Well, I'm a lawyer. But oh my God, just do the investigation.
Yeah.
What's going on? Why are we sitting here bantering with some guy?
Everything about the police work, everything about procedure, complete bunk and utter nonsense in this movie.
Right. And those guys infected the every crime scene they walked into. Yeah. I brought it up before.
I'm gonna move this pillow. I'm going to sniff
worst
it.
Worst cops ever.
Yeah. Here's some cocaine. I'm going to taste it. Make sure that's what this is. It's so stupid.
It reminded me of Intolerable Cruelty. I thought someone at some point was going to say, have you remembered Kirshner?
Yeah. Oh, I like that movie though. I know people think that's their least favorite Coen Brothers movie, but I like that
movie. It's the best.
I like
that
one a lot. I don't know about being the best, but it's pretty good. I got one final thing to say before Clips, and that is that I thought he had a son the whole time. I had no idea it was a daughter. I feel bad about that. But when he was earlier going, what are you doing, Dad? And blowing bubbles in his face and stuff, I thought it was a boy.
The character was so inconsequential that it, I don't blame you for not even remembering that he even had a child.
Why is it in the movie? Yeah. This child who he goes home and the child appears through a doorway and then says something and then disappears. What is this child's life like?
Yeah. At home with grandma. Dad's home. I've been home alone for the last 18 hours.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Is he a single dad? Is there a nanny?
Yeah.
They alluded to the story for like half a second. I mean, it's like, oh, we're taking the kid away and the kid is apparently staying at home with grandma. And it was, but there was no reason for the character to really be highly motivated. I don't know.
That was wasted. They did it wrong. They did it wrong and shouldn't have done it. That was just dumb. All right. We're going to take a quick break, talk about our sponsor, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Gather around me. Grab a mug and fill it with the best coffee ever. Oh, you don't have the best coffee, do you? You feel like you've been struggling to find just the right brew, just the right roast, just the right beans. Well, I have good news for you. For most of us, top quality coffee is not a luxury. It's a necessity. You don't want the crap. You want the good stuff. But exceptional coffee requires finding exceptional beans. That's why I love Stay Roasted. StayRoasted.com delivers 100% specialty grade coffee beans, hand selected to your taste and then delivered fresh. It's simple. Set some basic preferences in your profile there and let your roasters handle the rest. As simple as that. That's right, your roasters. Stay Roasted lets you pick from dozens of Americans' top craft roasted coffee makers for your personal roaster lineup. And your top roaster will match with you, the finest beans, and deliver them to you. It's based on what you want. When you refill next time, your next roaster is queued and ready to roast. Stay Roasted plans start at only 60 cents per brewed cup, and there are no commitments. Think how cheap that is compared to going to Starbucks or something. Try it for yourself. Visit StayRoasted.com/filmsack and get your first bag of coffee for free. You only pay the shipping. Think how ridiculously cheap that is. Pay shipping and get a free bag. That's StayRoasted.com/filmsack. They also have gift cards available, and Stay Roasted makes the perfect gift for any coffee lover this holiday season. Again, StayRoasted.com/filmsack today. Let's do some clips, because I got some dumb clips.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. How about we start with this one? This here one. Hold on. Gosh dang it, I'm in the wrong place. Here we go. There's one about some kind of... Oh, this weird noise at the opening. I just have to play. It's not weird, but it freaked me out. Here you go.
Yo!
There you go. that.
You don't want to watch this movie.
I was like, yodeling, I'm in. Yeah. And then I found out I was wrong.
Yeah, you were wrong. It was two guys on drums with nipples. That's what you got instead. Don't try that again.
Leave me alone, Eddie.
Don't ever try that again. Or else.
Jeez, serious.
She didn't try it. She already done it. She was out in the car.
That was like, your red herring stuff, though. And by the way, she tried to sound like some Dallas socialite. And
I couldn't figure out what she was doing.
Worst accent in the movie.
She's from she's from Germany. Like that was terrible to make her do that.
Worst accent in the movie.
Yeah, she's a German model, lovely woman, but come on. Here's the whispery thing that made me laugh.
We can't pull back just now. Deal's too far gone.
He
was in the house the whole
time. Weren't you guys on Seinfeld?
Every one of you. Crazy Joel Davola.
I didn't understand that. That whole weird anyway. The folks in on those guys. I mean, you can hear them better if you zoom in with the camera.
Right. Yeah. That's the whole hand wavy thing. Like zoom camera doesn't also mean zoom microphone.
Yeah.
If all you're going to do is re-say the same things back to the other guy, why not just get a miracle ear or something in that guy's ear and just be done with it? Why have a guy somewhere translating?
It's the gizmo. Yeah. You got to do the gizmo.
It's weird.
By
the way, the guy who was on Scrubs, I forgot to mention this when we talked about him earlier, but he's Christopher Lloyd's nephew.
What?
Huh. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
I just watched I watched the Cheers episode yesterday where Christopher Lloyd was in a two-parter to be continued as an artist that wanted to draw Diane Chambers. So my whole world is collapsing in on itself here. That's crazy. I had no idea. That's crazy.
What was Sam Lloyd also? There's something else.
He was the TV guide guy on Seinfeld. He was he's a member of the Blanks, a really cool a cappella group.
And that's him really singing on Scrubs, right? When they do the a cappella.
Really is
thing.
Him, yeah. Really is him.
Super talented. He's also he's just always so sweaty and greasy. Crazy. Just a greasy, sweaty, sad man.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, God, he plays that really well is what I mean.
Yeah. I'm looking at his
I don't know. There's something else that he does that drives me that I just like I see him and
Galaxy Quest.
He was in that.
He was in Galaxy Quest.
He was one of the nerds. Signature or something, or he ran the convention or something.
Right.
Oh, okay. Okay. I could see that. He wasn't one of the
Desperate Housewives.
I love it when Scott does that.
So happy to I love those guys. They're the freaking best.
He's been in everything. My God, you look at his.
I may be thinking of him on Night Court.
Oh my gosh!
Think about it. As a kid, I watched Night Court freaking endlessly.
I loved Night Court back in the day.
I've probably seen every episode of Night Court 7 times.
Yeah, Night Court's great. There's nothing wrong with Night Court. Here's A-hole talk.
That guy is an asshole.
That guy's an asshole.
Yes, I knew as soon as I heard that you were you're going to clip that out.
So stupid. All right, what's this?
He's using the gizmo.
Yes, Lieutenant Smith.
Yeah, it's a yeah.
It's a yeah. What is that difference between a yes and a yeah?
Was that a yes, Lieutenant Smith?
Yeah, it's a yeah.
I want to say, I don't care. Just like you would for what was the name of the company you had on Seinfeld that George worked for? Something
Vandal Industries?
No. The one where it was the actual one he worked for.
Oh,
but that guy, that actor who was his boss and never seemed to care. Yeah, and they called him
yes, right?
And they gave him names like T-Bone and
right.
What was the name of something finishing?
You're like Coco the monkey.
Yeah. That guy's a very sad story, though. So he was also, speaking of Coen Brothers movies, he was the devil or the cop with the dogs, but basically the devil in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And he's great in that. But here recently, in recent years, he was diagnosed with cancer, tried to kill himself after the cancer diagnosis, failed, but blew half his face off and didn't die. Ended up living through that and then eventually just died of the cancer. Just like a sad, like, I just feel bad. Feel bad for people that, anyway, whatever. That was a raw deal that guy got.
Great podcasting, though.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, hell of a podcast. All right, let's move on to this one. This is, what's this? Oh, I don't know what this is.
Guy named Connor.
Connor?
Yeah, John Connor.
But I thought he was long gone.
No, he's still very much alive. As a matter of fact, they put in a request for him.
Why would you make a movie 2 years after Terminator 2?
With a John Connor.
With a John Connor.
Yeah, that was weird.
That bugged me. Here's Connery saying something.
Beyond time.
Oh, yeah, beyond time. That's all.
Never even made the connection beyond that time. Sean Connery is playing John Connor.
Yeah, think of that. Maybe Sean Connery is John Connor, and Arnold Schwarzenegger wants you to come with me if you want to live. I don't know. All I know
is... I mean, the fact that his name is so similar to John Connor.
Sean Connery, John Connor. No, I knew that. I knew what you meant.
Okay.
I just took it in a dumb place.
Want to make sure that wasn't getting lost but in the...
I'm not the only one, right, who kept thinking of Terminator, right?
Yeah, no, I did the whole time. The
Okay.
Yeah, it drove me crazy. I hated it. And especially if it was 93 and I saw this, it would have really bugged me because literally a year and a half after Terminator 2 was out. Here's something with shoes.
Shoes.
Oh, he just says shoes.
Shoes.
There you go.
Shoes.
You brought shoes.
Sir, why is there like... Yeah.
Take off your shoes.
Never did.
No, he never did. That was the only time he ever talked about shoes. The rest of the time he had his shoes on. Didn't matter whose carpet it was. Sean Connery doesn't give a crap.
See, this is another thing. Like, in the book, the character would have stopped him at the door and explained the entire history of why you take your shoes off before you go in.
Yeah.
And... in the movie, it's reduced to one word of conflict, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's all there is to
also,
it.
Also, his best advice was this. Whoops. Was this.
Be on time.
That's good advice. Like, seriously, I think we should all be on time.
Be on time.
All right, fine. Here we go. Here's a chat with Connery.
When we arrive, you take charge of the negotiations. Don't bother to introduce me. Don't refer to me at all. Don't even look in my direction. Keep your jacket buttoned at all times. If they bow, you bow back. Same depth, same duration.
Believe it or not, I have done this before. You know, I do know these things.
And do keep your hands at your sides. The Japanese find big arm movements threatening.
Just don't pay your taxes, and then you won't be in any trouble. don't pay your taxes. All right, here's an irritating... What?
You'll probably find them irritating tonight.
Oh, okay. There you go. You might find them irritating tonight. All right.
Why is this guy the Japan expert?
I don't know. They don't understand.
Isn't it a Japanese American?
I know. He just golfs with people. That's it.
I think he is, and I think he is in the book, if I remember correctly. I think the John Connor. Well,
yeah, they say in the trivia claims that Crichton wrote the character in the book based on Sean Connery as an actor, and that he just got lucky that he got to be in the movie, but that he was always his inspiration. So I don't know if he was Japanese.
I bet Sean Connery talked to Japanese businessman.
The John Connor character in the book was just a guy who lived in Japan as well and acquainted with Japanese culture, retired captain.
Yeah. I would have gone for Mako as his partner. That would have been better. Actual Japanese guy, totally interesting actor. He would have been great.
Or George Takei.
Yeah, or George Takei.
You're probably going to find them irritating.
Oh my.
For me, one of the things about the whole book and other books, like at the time I was reading Eric von Lustbader and I was reading James Michener and James Clavell. Like, so for me, it was all about getting immersed into something that was wholly unfamiliar. And that's what these authors did. And so when you actually see the movie, you're like, oh, this isn't unfamiliar at all. This is just Los Angeles at night after a rainstorm. Like, this is, you know what I mean? It just, there's something to be desired, and it's in every scene in the film.
Yep. Here's some angry acting. I'll give you 30 seconds of it, in fact. Here you go.
I don't know, sir. It looks like she's wearing a party dress to me.
Oh, she's wearing a dress. I agree. Look, Lieutenant, you have to appreciate the position of the Nakamoto Corporation.
Sir, I do appreciate
this. This is an important evening for the Nakamoto Corporation. A very public evening. We don't want it marred by unfounded allegations concerning the death of a woman of no importance.
A woman of no importance?
You have some nerve.
I can't imagine how she came to be in the building at all.
You have some nerve!
But your Lieutenant Graham intends to go down and interrogate everybody.
Man, you got some nerve, he just kept saying. Way to go, Keitel.
Keitel just came out of nowhere with that one, too.
Here's Connery doing Japan yelling. All right, here you go.
Who's a karuna?
I'm guessing if you're Japanese and you hear that, you think it's the worst accent.
Yeah.
I learned this phonetically. Yeah.
What is it with Connery doing having to do something in a different accent. Like, I feel like we've seen this 17 times. Like, he's, you know, like in Highlander, he was playing a Spaniard or something. Like, why do they keep doing this to this guy?
I don't know. That was
Kawasaki. Sudoku.
Sudoku.
We've heard him do bad Russian. Just stop.
Picross. Yeah. I enjoyed it though when he did it in this, but I'm sure it's terrible. Craving for something.
I get a craving for mercury. I'll eat a thermometer.
Gross. Don't do that.
went to sushi right after this.
Yeah, he did.
Same sex Mary, and
that's all. Did you eat it off of a girl's body?
Yeah. I did not. We went to a place called Sushi Train. Mm. They used to be called Sushi Boat, but the sign is still boat shaped, but just has the word Sushi Train.
Great.
Kind of vehicle. We had a boat,
right? It's one of these places with a little, instead of a conveyor belt, they actually have a train, a model train that goes around and delivers sushi.
Oh,
that's kind of cool. I'd do that.
You made it all better. I was like thinking, oh, Denver sushi, give me a break. But then the train made it festive.
Yeah.
But all I could think of is just how much mercury am I eating from this cheap ass place? They can't even change their sign.
You never know.
The next name of the restaurant is going to be Sushi Cargo Vehicle.
Yeah. sushi semi. Slingshot.
Every Asian restaurant around here, they always change their names to something with golden in it. It's always golden something.
Right.
The golden wok, the golden bum, the golden whatever. The
golden bum.
Golden bum.
Golden phoenix.
Yeah. The golden phoenix.
We have a place near us called the Heaven Dragon, but I call it the Heathen Dragon.
No, that's pretty good. Okay. That's pretty good. Here's a gizmo thing.
The gizmo, show me.
Show me the gizmo. The gizmo.
The gizmo.
The gizmo.
Show me.
Show me that gizmo.
It'd be so awesome if he pulled out a freaking gremlin.
Hogwai. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get him wet, but you get the free Froger. Yeah, you get the free Froger. I love that we've completely conflated that Simpsons episode forever with that. It's impossible to change it.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Here's hot Connery breath.
Oh, on the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, some more CSI work in there.
They were that using all their so bodily functions.
Yeah, it did feel brilliant, didn't it? Oh, you know that. Okay, let's quickly just decide as a group what we think that breath smelled like. All right.
Whoa.
I'm going with
cod. Definitely some cod.
I can't top it. That's a good one.
I know. Yeah.
I was going to say haggis, but you got me.
Yeah, cod's better. Cod's really good. All right, here's this. I like this here.
Look, senpai, apple pie, whatever it is you want me to call you, we have a murder here. I want
to
solve it.
I wanted him to call him apple pie for the rest of the movie.
Right? Yeah. I just told you senpai.
If there was a murder, yo, I'd solve it.
Yeah.
Like, every single line. He is asked to speak like Will Smith from the early 90s. Yep.
We got a crime to solve. Let's go, apple pie. Like, that would have been a better movie. Hey, when Ibbot heard his date wanted French food at prom, this was the reply.
I'm a straight meat and potatoes man.
There you go. You're a straight meat and potatoes man. You don't want no French food.
Straight meat and potatoes.
Now, I don't like the term.
I like dipping the potatoes into my sake.
There's a lot of you ruffle a lot of feathers when you refer back to the World War II era term that people referred to Japanese when we were at war with them as Japs. That's a thing people did, right? But what I've never heard is the combination of Japanese and perpetrator used in short form. So here it is.
It's a Jap perp, all right.
It's a Jap perp.
Jap perp.
Thanks, Keitel.
It's a Jap perp, all right.
Jeez. All right. Oh, you know what? This has a Reservoir Dogs connection because you got Steve Buscemi for a hot 30 seconds.
Oh, and, right.
Mr. Keitel. Pink and Mr. What was he? Mr. White? No, Mr. Crap.
And I kind of
Blue.
Mr. Blue.
I was expecting Stuck in the Middle with You to be played at some point.
Yeah, right. Why not? Somebody's ear getting bit off or torn, cut off. Not bit
cut
off.
Cut off. Sliced it off. Right off.
What the heck does this mean? I wrote.
He looks Japanese.
Maybe he's Polish.
What did that mean? Maybe he's Polish. Explain that.
I quit trying to understand this movie about. Yeah,
I don't even remember that.
And it was the 15th time they were watching the same horrible sex murder video. And he said, and it was in the office this time when they brought him the supposed non-doctored thing that turned out to actually be doctored. And he says that.
He looks Japanese.
Maybe he's Polish.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe he's Polish?
You might find me irritating after a few hours.
I don't either.
Finally, Buscemi speaks.
Hey, Lieutenant Smith. Willie Wilhelm, LA Times. How's it going?
Pretty busy right now.
Oh, I can understand that. Say, we're preparing a little story on you. We had a couple of questions about the Martino case. Remember that one? A couple years back, the one about accusations accepting a bribe brought against you by Mr. Martino. Any comment?
No comment.
All right, real quick. He's the chick in the bucket this week.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing came of that except for the phone call with the wife. That's it.
And why was he in the interrogation room with Wesley Snipes? Like, they had 50 people sitting there in that interrogation room with dude from Seinfeld.
Yeah, they never explain it. It never
even
made
even
sense.
Hair was in there.
Yeah,
haircut.
By the way, they're only a year away from The Rock, so I forgive all of this because Sean Connery was in The Rock like a year later, mm-hmm. and that's one of the finest films ever made. Freaking love that movie. All right. How about, here's a couple more. We got this one.
Hey, it's for horses.
All right. Horses.
How did that line make it into this movie?
Right. Because there was no follow-up to it. And you look like a cow. You're nothing. It's just like, hey, it's for horses.
Yeah. It's like a little kid would say it. They'd mm-hmm. say, I know you are, but what about me?
Right. Yeah.
Stupid. All right. Here. And now he's swearing.
You stupid little shit. Fuck off.
There you go. That's pretty good.
This is why Michael Crichton left the, you know, it wasn't over casting Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
Maybe those lines were improvs by Connery. Maybe Connery was, this is like how he wants the character to talk.
Yeah.
And he just started saying stuff.
Maybe Crichton said, Sean, could you try it this way? And he said,
you stupid little shit. Fuck off.
And then he left the production.
Yeah. We'll just leave that in the film.
Yeah.
Where's my green room?
Where's my green room?
Great stuff, Mr. Connery.
Here's a hit sound that I liked. That.
Is that where he gives him the two fingers to the neck?
Yeah. But he kept talking somehow on the phone, this particular guy.
Oh, this is the guy in the parking garage. Yeah. That, right, kept talking on his little microphone.
Yeah, he was like, oh, yeah, Nakatomi, whatever. And then have a heard of it, and then he fell.
Yes.
It's really good. All right. Here's a pissed off scene.
They won't get away with this. I am very, very Okota.
Pissed off.
Yes, pissed off.
Yes.
You ever lose your
language? How you say in English?
Pissed off.
Why couldn't he just say pissed off?
I don't know. That was like a dumb thing.
Yeah.
Well, let's quickly remind people that he's familiar with the Japanese culture.
Yeah, we had to keep circling back to that. You know, ooh, he's like a ninja. We just don't know it. All right.
You know, okay, if you can learn how to, like, knock somebody out with, like, two fingers, why would you learn any other stuff? Yeah, why would you even go learning all the high kicks and everything? Any goober could learn the other.
Yeah, just
I don't understand just that. I don't understand
lightning,
that
lightning fast throw punches are the way to go. If I've learned anything from movies, all right. How about I don't know what this is.
I am very, very Okota.
No, sorry, that's the same clip. All right, here's this one. This is Mad Japan Man. Okay, final clip. Here you go. There you go.
Wow.
I love that one. It's pretty good.
Thank you for not calling it Mad Jap Perp.
Yeah, right. Mad Jap Perp.
They took an interesting approach to this because they didn't subtitle the Japanese.
Oh, right.
But they would drop back down into English eventually.
Oh, always, yeah.
In discussions, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where I stand on, like, I think what I appreciate, like, I don't know if you guys have seen Narcos on Netflix, but they have a ton of subtitles. They do not try to fake it. Like, if there's a lot of Spanish, and there is, it's all done in Spanish, and you get subtitles for all of it. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't want to read all that, but then I appreciate the authenticity, so I don't know where I stand on it. I think I kind of like, I don't know. I don't know what I like. Maybe I like Star Trek, Universal Translator. That's the way to go.
That's the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for that. Oh, look. I got right here, you guys can't see this, but I have a little checklist that has just been handed to me. This is the Film Sack checklist for the film
Rising
Sun.
Did some naked lady hand it to you?
Yes, from her nipple. I got it off her nipple.
Thank you.
It says, make us watch the disc video thing 20 times in a row and act like that's normal. Check. Everything sounds like it's wheezing, check. And stupid ending, check. All right, that's a pretty good checklist. Hey, look at this Star Trek stuff. Got a bunch. Ray Wise was Senator John Morton in this. In TNG, he played Leeko in the episode Who Watches the Watchers. And on Voyager, guest starred as Arturus in the episode Hope and Fear. So Ray Wise all up in the Star Trek. You got Max Grodenchik, who played the club manager in DS9. He played Rom. Rom. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
It is. It's a big part, if you think about it. Dan Butler played Ken Shubik in Voyager, played Steth. He was a Tom Paris imposter. So there's that. And then Dakin Matthews played Professor Sanders in Voyager. He played Admiral Patterson in the episode Relativity. And then Clyde Katsutsu played Tanaka. In TNG, played Vice Admiral Nakamura in the episode The Measure of a Man, Phantasms and All Good Things. So
they used them in several episodes.
Yeah, a very busy little Star Trek-y thing going on in this film. Soundtrack grade, I'd give it a meh for droning. It just droned the whole time. Like it never, even in some of the clips I've been playing, you can hear the exact same drone sound. So for example, this guy yelling. You hear it in the background going. Now here it is again.
Hey, it's for horse.
No, not that one. Sorry. Same thing. Different scene.
Except for the Blue Man Group, where they were doing the, you know,
all the drums,
driving away the spirits. So
And so that's the deal there is you're supposed to be getting this sense of what Japanese music sounds like, but it doesn't.
Nope. Not even close. Not even close.
No, it sounds like Don't Fence Me In and the B-52s.
That's right.
Yes, it did. True story.
I absolutely love the taiko drum thing. Like, there was a, I don't know if it's still around, but there was a great taiko drum show in Branson, Missouri some years ago that I saw, and I just thought it was so good.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's just like, oh, look at these funny people.
I'm so glad that you have had a bunch of time in Branson. I don't know why I like that about you, but I like that about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now opening for Yakov Smirnoff, the taiko drum show.
I love it. Because I just feel like one of us should be familiar with Branson in some more intimate way, and you're the one. I like that.
That show, by the way, was a Japanese fiddler named Shoji Tabuchi. Like I said, I don't know if he's still around, but Shoji Tabuchi was a big damn deal some years ago.
Yeah. You notice how many times in movies and TV the Japanese characters are named Nakamura? Have you noticed that? That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a name.
It's annoying. It's just too many.
Racist.
Yeah, figure your crap out, Hollywood. All right, here's the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less, at least until Twitter changes that. You can put images in for free now. Anyway, let's start with Randy.
Rising Sun. Sean Connery is the Jane Goodall of Japanese people. Don't you know they loved going to see this movie? Eye roll emoji.
Dear Film Sack, I don't think it's cool that Randy referred to Japanese people as gorillas. Thanks. Love the show. Just kidding. Brian Dunaway.
Rising Sun, like discovering some dude angrily hacking heads off giant frozen fish in the dark. Walk away. There are no answers here.
I forgot about him. I'm so glad you brought him back up. In the dark, hacking heads off giant fish.
He's upstairs. You're looking for Johnny's upstairs.
That's amazing. Sorry about the smell. See ya.
This is my apartment. I can do whatever I want. Yeah,
I pay the rent here. And finally, Brian Ibbett.
Rising Sun. You got your senpai and my kohai. You got your kohai and my senpai. Enhance.
Well done.
Oh, yeah. The whole zoom and enhance thing. The book, by the way, said that they used high definition videotape. And in this, they went with these mini disc things. So there's that.
Right.
Yeah. And they called them. Laser disc or something. Oh, we didn't even talk about the next generation tech company that they went and visited. That was fun as well.
Yeah. Next generation Photoshop video over there that they had going.
CD duplicator that can duplicate 45 CDs at once in a big drawer.
Fancy.
Like something from Star Trek too, man. It was weird.
It was weird. Not as weird as this. This also just handed to me alternate titles. Use the Gizmo or Minidisc the Universe. I don't know what that means. It was late when I wrote it. All right. Hey, got emails. Two of them. These come to us at filmsack@gmail.com. And this one's from Peter, who says, hello. In Sweden, we've had reserved seats for a long time. But now we have two additional levels as plus chairs with 1.5 to 2 meters extra leg space and VIP.
I'm glad I didn't do the worst accent on the whole show.
I know. Thank you. No problem. I wanted to help you out there a little bit. And VIP cinema is where you get a recliner, and it's usually only 15 to 20 seats. Each chair has a table to the side, and the first row has personal ottomans. Very nice cinema experience, Peter. Yeah, we just got this. So when we saw the Warcraft movie, I was telling Ibbot this the other day, when we had the Warcraft movie rented out and everybody came, or a lot of you guys came and saw it, that exact movie theater was supposed to have been renovated by then to feature a bunch of these seats, and now it does. So I saw Doctor Strange in this amazing heated reclining seat.
What?
It was amazing. And these tray table things that were like fancy and
little
like
rotating. I saw those in your photo, like a little rotating tray table.
It was so nice, you guys. And that's all we're going to do from now on is go there. So I can't wait for, in fact, we're seeing that. I think tonight we're seeing Arrival.
So when are we going to, when are we going to finally get to the point that they have beds in there? You can just,
there are theaters where they actually have beds.
Are they really?
I swear to God, I saw a photo of this. It's like little day bed things all side by side, and then another cascading level down, and then a bunch of little day beds. Yeah.
You would have had a hell of a nap in this movie.
Fine, I'm going to take it to the next level. I want a tub.
All right.
From my vantage point in SoCal, though, it took me a second to catch up with you on the heated seats. Like, why would they want heated seats? That sounds horrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here it's, I don't know, they keep them so air conditioned still, and now that it's cold out, it's, I don't know, it was a really nice addition. Plus, you can turn it off if you want. But it had all these controls, and you could just lay it all the way back. And the biggest man was sitting next to me, and I wasn't even near him. That's what was great.
Nice.
This enormous man. He was probably, I don't know, he was huge. And I'm not making fun of him. He was just very, very large. And normally, it would be a very uncomfortable sitting next to somebody because there'd be no room. This was like, he could have been on a different planet. It was amazing. Anyway,
that is insane with like little nightstands,
little night lights, little side tables with lamps on it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jonathan from Layton, Utah, a local, wrote in, says, "Dear Scott, Brian, and Randy," you spelled both your names with a Y, which is funny. Anyway, could you guys please find a way to watch the original Westworld movie that the show is based off of? I know some of the cable networks are making it available to watch to capitalize on the success of the HBO show. But I would be awesome if you guys would watch it. I hear it is streaming, or it is steaming garbage. I disagree. I disagree.
It's streaming garbage.
I think it's, for its time, for 73, I think there's some interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah, I never saw it. Never saw the original Westworld movie, but...
we should do it.
I'd love totally it. We actually have had it on our upcoming list before, and it just escaped us before we got to it. It'll happen.
It'll make it. Yeah, the minute it shows up, like we just pushed Judge Dredd to our next movie because it just showed up, and we're like, let's get that damn thing. So we were always willing to do that. We'll butt in line whenever something phenomenal happens, and that is to say, next week we will be watching Judge Dredd, not the good one, not Dredd. That's a good one. That's a good movie. We're talking Judge Dredd, Sylvester Stallone, and You Can Do It guy, Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider, father of hit singer-songwriter Elle King.
Yeah, she's amazing, her voice, man.
She's really good.
So good.
And for those of you who, you know, you always get your podcast on Monday and say, God, I wish this thing was live streamed. Well, next weekend is a one-time only per year thing. Mm-hmm. It will be live streamed as part of the Coverthon.
Didn't we do that last year, too? We did that as well. We did. Yeah, it's always fun. And Brian's always completely hammered, and that's the best part.
Well, hammered, tired.
Tired, yeah. He's not drunk.
Yes.
Saturday, so we may as well tell people, Saturday at 8 o'clock Mountain Time, that's 7 a.m. Pacific. Ooh, Randy, so sorry on that.
It's okay.
That would be 10 o'clock Brian time, Dunaway time, and we'll do a live episode, and we're very much looking forward to it, and we're excited to also support the Coverthon, which is a rad thing you do every year. So people check that out. That'll be, let's see, where will we do that live? Coverville.com/live, yeah? Yeah?
That's right, yes.
Okay. Well, there you have it then.
And if you can't join us, we'll still have, you know, the podcast.
Yeah, the podcast will be there. It'll all go out like normal. In fact, for us, it's only an hour earlier anyway, so it's not that big a difference.
And by the way, for those of you out there who are confused, like maybe one of the hosts of the show, we have not actually ever sacked Judge Dredd before.
That is true. We never have.
So you know, I even looked it up because I was just like, well, what if I...
Who thought we did?
What if we did?
Who thought we did? Oh, you did, because you thought it was the Taco Bell seashell thing, and you were thinking of...
Right, you were thinking Demolition Man. Yeah. Which it might as well be.
Yeah. And speaking of Wesley Snipes, too, by the way.
Right. Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, he was so much better in that than in this.
Yeah. And I think he was better in the
Blade.
Blade, yeah. Blade was great. Mm-hmm. He's an interesting dude these days. His tweets are interesting. I recommend following.
Is he still kind of trying to resurface from that whole bankruptcy and tax evasion thing?
I think so. And I haven't seen any movies. Well, I'd have to look it up if he's working on anything, but I don't know if he's acting anymore. I don't know. It's weird. Hmm. He's an interesting guy. New Jack City's interesting. There's things to watch, but this is not one of them. Rising Sun. Peace, poo. This is going to do it for us, everybody. Thank you all for being here. Don't forget next week live, 8 o'clock a.m. Mountain Time. That's over at coverville.com/live. In the meantime, filmsack.com is our website. All links point to there, and the blog is there, so you guys can leave your comments and hang out with us and talk and tell us what you think we said wrong in an episode. We love those. It's totally fine. You can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. You can email us at filmsack@gmail.com and find us on Twitter at filmsack. That twill do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Senpai.
Oh, and happy Thanksgiving, everybody.